Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the newest edition of the Lando Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky on an incredibly busy Wednesday afternoon. Something, Andy, that turned into, like, I forget who it was on Twitter that we saw that said, never underestimate the NBA's ability to completely wreck a workday. Because it happened today with James Harden being traded from the Houston Rockets to the Brooklyn Nets in what could only be described as a blockbuster.
Yeah, I saw a great meme. You know, the guy who's holding hands with the girl, and then he's clearly looking at the other girl passing it. The girl that he's holding hands with says presidential impeachment, and then the girl that he's looking at says blockbuster NBA trade. And it's just perfect. That's perfect. Exactly what happened.
All right, so we got Jared Weiss. We had Jared Weiss from The Athletic, covers the Celtics for The Athletic, but wrote a great story this week about what had been the big story in the NBA all week long, which is COVID and the postponement of games and the new tracing protocols and all the new rules and all that kind of stuff. That got blown to hell. But Jared was kind enough still to join us, and we have that conversation with a lot of Harden reaction. He covered Kyrie Irving in Boston, so he's got some good insight into what's going on with Kyrie and how that could work once Harden arrives in Brooklyn. But before we get to that, of course, Andy, the Land of Lakers podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network. Support always brought to us by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. If you are an aggressive ball shaver like Danny Green was, as we learned last year, like really, really aggressive about it, this is stuff for you. If you're Alex Caruso, a little more modest, like to do things above the waist, that's fine too. Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team, 18 months they spent perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created, and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LAKERS20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code LAKERS20. And might I make a personal recommendation for the ball deodorant? That stuff smells fantastic. 20% off Manscaped LAKERS20.
The NBA and college basketball are back. NFL playoffs now in the second round. With all these sports going on, there are plenty of bets to lock in. So if you're thinking about the Lakers to repeat their NBA championship or someone to upset Pat Mahomes, as his mom refers to him, and the Chiefs, you need to go up to betonline.ag. This weekend, you've got Packers versus Rams, number one offense in Green Bay versus the number one defense with the Rams, along with a quarterback who may not be able to hold the ball because he has pins in his thumb. Plus, it's in Lambeau. A lot to figure out there, but either way, you can lay down your money from game spreads to totals to a team to a player, coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online, and there is always the online casino as well. It never closes. It is also safer than the actual casinos, which you should not be in right now. So head to betonline.ag today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, betonline.ag to sign up today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Andy, you know what happens when you have the number one offense against the number one defense? You know what they say? Something's got to give.
Indeed.
Something's got to give. All right, so let's get to it. We had a chance to speak with Jared Weiss from The Athletic, covers the Celtics. And, of course, you know him as the host, one of the hosts on The Daily Ding. Great podcast that you get every day there at The Athletic. Jared Weiss. All right. So, Jared, thanks so much for coming on. We originally reached out to you. You wrote a really important and great feature about the NBA's response to the incredible run of postponements related to COVID. And all of that conversation, which we still think we might have, has been totally undone by the James Harden deal, which happened.
Who cares?
As we were starting. Okay.
Pandemics come and go, but blockbuster trades are forever.
Exactly. Okay. So, all right. What do we think? I'll run down for people. Brooklyn gets James Harden. Cleveland gets Jared Allen. Houston gets Victor Oladipo. First round, unprotected first round picks in 22, 24, and 26 with pick swaps in 21, 23, 25, and 27. It's a lot of stuff. Indiana ends up with Caris LeVert. We'll start with you, Jared. What was your reaction to this?
My first reaction was, wow, Indiana, what a steal. They solved their Victor Oladipo problem that they had to solve at some point this year. And they got a guy that's a pretty, not quite as good, but somewhat comparable player who I think doesn't want to leave right away. So I think they managed that pretty nicely. But I would have, in a normal situation, I would have preferred Ben Simmons. You're getting someone that you know is a foundational star that put him in the right system around the right people. I.e. not a center that likes to post up and is shooting below 30% from three, you could build something really great around him.
Right.
But then when you look at those picks and you look at the fact that they're getting a pick swap in 2027, first rounder in 2026, even if this Nets team does work out, those picks are still going to be top picks. There's no way this team is still going to be good 5 years from now. They're going to be old. They're going to peter out. So as far as the long-term value play is concerned, you compare this to, the only other comparable trade that we've seen kind of play out in its entirety is the Celtics doing the trade with Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, the original Nets trade, as it was known. I guess this is Nets trade 2.0. And you saw that those picks turned into the two foundational stars that they're building their team around now. That trade worked out pretty damn well for them. And so this trade could not flop spectacularly the way that this trade did the first time around for Brooklyn, and it would still probably work out in a pretty similar fashion for Houston. So I like the way that Houston went about this. I think I still would have preferred to take Ben Simmons because you're kind of hoping that one of those picks is good enough that you could get someone like Ben Simmons. I'd rather just get Ben Simmons now. Although on the flip side, they get the tank now and they get a top five pick in a pretty incredible draft. So there is the upside on that. But I think Houston, they needed something insane to make it worthwhile to change trade to Harden, and they got something insane. They got 9 draft picks.
Well, I mean, part of what I think works in Philadelphia's favor as far as whether or not they move Ben Simmons, whether or not they ultimately pull the trigger on something like that, is they're actually having a good season right now. They're eight and four. They're just behind Boston at the top of the Eastern Conference. And there isn't as much pressure to get it done beyond the idea that you might just miss out on the opportunity. The way that they've rebuilt that Sixers roster at least makes sense in trying to fix some of the things that seem to have led to a regression with Simmons and Embiid on the court, because it wasn't that long ago where the two of them looked like they played incredibly well together, and you were left with this question heading into this season about whether it's the two of them just don't work or whether the pieces around them didn't maximize them. And small sample size, it seems like it may have been the pieces that were the issue. Philadelphia might in a couple of years decide we missed out on an opportunity, but they didn't feel like they had a gun to their head the way Houston clearly did. But also Brooklyn's season has been chaotic. They're in a position where it feels like, okay, we're on the clock to make this work with Durant and Irving, but in particular Durant, and things are off to a bad start.
Yeah, and at least Ben Simmons is, 8 or 9 years younger than Kevin Durant? So it's like they're still there's still some time, even if it feels like there isn't any time left for that team because they've been together for so long. So you still have the youth factor there. There isn't this impetus that you have to strike now in the same way that there is for Brooklyn. So I understand that motivation. And yeah, I mean, this Philly team might be good enough to win it just by putting the right lineup in place, by having Curry and Green out there next to those guys. So I'm excited to see what Philly can do. On the other hand, now you have probably the most talented trio of players ever to be on one team in NBA history, pretty much. I mean, you have three top 10 scorers in the league right now together. I don't know if it's going to fit together nicely, but as far as just raw talent is concerned, I mean, you're up there at a pretty historic level.
Well, raw scoring talent. It seems like a
prohibitive favorite.
Yeah, I mean, raw scoring talent, like you said, the pieces fitting together, I think it remains to be seen. Like, you look at Miami's big three, for example, like, they didn't have necessarily the same explosiveness in terms of scoring potential, but I think in terms of pieces that work together on both sides of the ball, and that matters, their fit, even though it took a minute to find it, I think that fit has a far higher potential than what you're going to see with Brooklyn's big three right now. I mean, there's
Well, I think it just depends. Like, you just don't know. Like, this is, you know, in terms of a sheer raw, it's in a lot of ways, it's really a test of the whole how much does talent matter thing, because you start to put these ingredients together. You know, like you say, Jared, KD and Harden together, assuming, you know, KD's look great. And let's assume Harden drops a few pounds over the course of the season and evolves back into what he normally looks like. You know, he is a top five player. I mean, he is that good. That in and of itself gives you a pairing that sort of rivals what the Lakers have, at least in some ways, in terms of sheer talent with AD and LeBron. And now you add Kyrie as a third who, when he's with the team and is focused on what he's doing, and we'll get to that here in a second, is as, you know, is as dynamic a scorer as you're going to find in the league. So, you know, from a sheer talent standpoint, I think what you're saying has a lot of validity to it, but, you know, how much then does fit become the potential limiting factor, or like Andy says, the defense become a potential limiting factor?
Yeah, this is like living in the Northeast and buying a Ferrari, a Lamborghini, and an Aston Martin. It's like, it's great you got three sports cars, but it'd be also nice if you had a car for the winter too, or have a nice minivan for the family when you got to go to soccer practice. It's like they've got the three Ferraris, and I love trying to think about a balanced roster and all the things that, you know, that make basketball a way more well-rounded sport than just points, points, points. And at the same time, you feel like these guys could average like 90 points a game just between like, they just simply might win every game 140 to 135. And like that works. Cause they're not balanced in a way like that the Warriors were, that going back to the Heat and those other older great big three teams from the 80s and all that. Like, they don't have those balance. Those were teams compiled of great two-way players that complemented each other offensively in a way that these guys, at least as they've generally operated, don't necessarily, but they certainly have the capability to. And we know while Kyrie was still at least showing up to Nets practice, he was talking about how he was looking forward to playing off the ball more this year and how he was trying to take the ball out of his hands more so he could be more of a complimentary and more of an efficient player, which is stuff that when he was in Boston, when I was covering him, I'm like, this is the stuff that he should be embracing. Like, take the ball out of a guy's hands, it just makes it even harder to stop the guy once you put the ball back in his hands. And Steph Curry certainly learned that, and a lot of people are trying to learn from that. And Kyrie has a lot of he's not as good of a shooter as Steph Curry is, but he's, as far as his talent is concerned, you know, he's up there in that same relative stratosphere, relative stratosphere as Harden and Durant. And I think if he really unlocks his potential by learning how to fit with these guys, then you're reaching a threshold of scoring and playmaking capability that could offset the massive defensive issue that is having a backcourt of two guys that are just notoriously terrible effort defenders in an era in the league where, like, you need good guard defenders because every other team has great guards as well.
Between Durant, Harden and Kyrie, because there's going to have to be some degree of adjustment with all three of them. Who do you think needs, Jared, to adjust the most in the way they play? And then who do you think will ultimately adjust most in the way they play? Because it may not be the same answer.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it's Harden, right? Because Harden's been in the system where he just pounds the air out of the ball the entire time. And he needs to, I mean, you could have him be your primary pick and roll guy and have the other guys play off of him, but that style has certainly got to change. So he's the one that needs to make the biggest adjustment. Honestly, him making a small adjustment would still be a relatively massive adjustment. So I think he will be the one to do it. And I think he's tired of playing the way that he's playing, especially if you look at the way he's been playing so far this year. He just kind of like does this thing. Then if he gets rid of the ball, he just starts walking because he just didn't give a crap. And I think now he's going to probably embrace the idea that he can spend a lot of possessions just kind of standing there on the wing, ready, waiting for the ball to swing his way. And then he can just, like, have you ever seen James Harden attack off the catch? I feel like I've seen it twice in my entire life.
Well, like, I was going to ask, do you think he's tired of the way he's been playing, or is he just tired? I mean, because he's clearly out of shape. I mean, he ironically, this is so funny. I had no idea about this.
He kind of needs to run to Brooklyn just to kind of work off.
I'm reading from eater.com, the Houston branch of it. He's got a restaurant, a fine dining restaurant, that is going to be opening in about a week and a half, which is kind of hilarious. But you also wonder, like, has he really been indulging in the tasting menu? Because he has just really let himself go. And it's not even that he's played terrible since this season's began, but he looks like a guy that has not been taking care of himself, has not been engaged. And you do wonder, like, just what's it going to be like for him trying to really just kickstart this brand new environment that he's in?
No, he's going to have to go to a lot of juice bars in Brooklyn. That's for sure. I don't know if there's a Chick-fil-A in Brooklyn, but yeah, I mean, doesn't he show up 30 pounds overweight every single year? And then by the time the playoffs roll around, the guy's just steamrolling 50 minutes a night. I think this is like something that's well established enough that we know how it's going to go. The issue is just that you can't do that forever unless you're LeBron. At a certain point, your body right. is going to start like the contact that usually just bounces right off of you is going to start bruising a little bit more. It's going to start hurting your joints a little bit more. And he's not in his 20s anymore. He's in his 30s now. So I don't know. There's going to be some point in the near future, in the next couple seasons, where he twists an ankle and he's actually out for a couple months or, you know, something like that. And carrying that extra weight is going to exacerbate the issue. But I don't know if it's going to be this year.
I mean, it's going to take a little time, and, you know, we still haven't gotten to whether or not when Kyrie comes back, what this does for the whole, you know, around Kyrie, all of that. But, you know, inevitably he's going to show up. He'll say the right things. He'll do the right stuff. I never begrudge guys for wanting to get out of where they are. He gave a lot of time to Houston. I think, you know, regardless of what you think the Rockets did for him, which was a lot, they tried a lot of different combinations around him. Players are entitled to want to try something different. I don't have a problem with it. The how he did it, I think, was inartful, to say the least. If he shows up in Brooklyn and says the right stuff, does the right stuff, puts in the work, seems to change, you know, his style of play or whatever it is for this season, how much faith do you have that whatever changes he might make, whatever investment he might make in this season, actually would last beyond this year into next year and into the 3 or 4 or 5 seasons that the Nets would need? Because all three of these guys can walk away after next year.
Yeah, I mean, he's been wanting to win a championship. I think it's pretty clear that he's going to stay there until he gets the ring. And the guy wants to be a huge star. He wants a sneaker line to kind of once again become a huge thing, because I think his sneaker line has kind of been struggling. So being in New York, I feel like, is a pretty ideal situation for him, especially for someone that loves to party so much. You're in New York. So I feel like
the beard fits beautifully in Brooklyn.
Yeah. So, like, I think he's in a place where it would make sense for him to settle long term, as far as having the kind of lifestyle that he wants. and the basketball's still going to be there. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's, I doubt it, but it's possible. Maybe he's the kind of guy that he's willing to sacrifice running the show for a little while to try to win the ring, but then he just wants to go back to taking 30 shots a game. I highly doubt he wants to do that, but it's very possible that's what he wants in the end.
Yeah, trying to read James Harden, I think, especially the last 3 or 4 years, has been extremely difficult. You know, he keeps playing shadow GM, getting what he wants, losing interest in it pretty quickly. And, you know, at some point, the common issue has to be him because he's always the one that's been there. And, like, I'm a big reason I've said from the beginning, if I were Brooklyn, I would not have made this type of deal, is I would be very wary culturally about what a locker room led by Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and now James Harden looks like, operates. The idea of those three trying to hold an entire locker room accountable, but holding each other accountable, what that looks like, how you establish some type of common voice, I think at most generous is going to be dicey. I guess to begin, you've actually covered Kyrie before during his time when he was in Boston. Like, how do you picture sort of that part of it playing out, either the way you envision or the way you think it needs to? But also, too, like, from your time around Kyrie, what do you think is potentially going on?
So as far as the locker room fit, you know, Kyrie's someone who, at least when he was in Boston, he came into that situation thinking, I'm the person here that knows how to win, so I'm going to show everyone else how to win. And that went very poorly. And so he goes to Brooklyn, and it was very clear that he still had that same attitude with the way that he was talking, you know, the way he kind of ran things, and the way that he just, like, also wasn't really involved at all. It was kind of a ghost there. And I think that it's as simple as that. He's going to respect guys like KD, probably Harden, I assume, as well. Certainly KD's, we know that they're very close. And KD has a championship experience where Kyrie can be like, I know that that guy knows what it takes because he's been there. He beat me. I know what it is. Harden hasn't won yet, but I feel like it's done pretty much everything else to establish himself as someone meriting that level of respect. So I think that that is going to prevent Kyrie from kind of starting the kind of what's the word I'm trying to think of? Not subversiveness. When you don't respect authority, and I can't remember the word off the top of my head right now. Insubordination. Insubordination. Yes. There we go. So I think it's going to prevent him from, you know, being insubordinate to not just like the coaching staff, which we know is probably going to be an issue at some point, but to the just level of respect you're supposed to show for your teammates and most importantly, like the top dogs on the team. I don't think that's going to be an issue because these guys are just so well established at this point. So that probably won't be an issue, but I think there's certainly going to be some point where he's going to feel like his creativity is not being unleashed and being utilized properly. And that's going to be something they're going to have to navigate. And that's
are you talking about the basketball or like his, you know, artistry, like his creativity away from the game? Like, you know, are the Nets
isn't that one and the same, right? Yeah,
that is true.
Art, yeah. So as far as that's concerned, like, I think that's something that they have between D'Antoni and Jacques Vaughn and Steve Nash. I feel like they have the structure in place to take this gamble and try to be able to manage this gamble, especially because D'Antoni and Harden already have that relationship.
How? I mean, obviously the league has stuff they got to work out with Kyrie in terms of independent of, like, if Kyrie decided I want to come back and join the team tomorrow, the league still has to work out, you know, the protocols and how long he'd be out and how they have to be away from the team and all that based on the videos and stuff that surfaced with him at the party with his family. Does this make him come back faster? Does it come back slower? Does it matter at all? Is this something that I wonder if the Nets do this because they are worried that he might decide he doesn't want to play this season. And if that's the case, then you don't want to be left with just Durant after you've made this massive investment and you can replace Kyrie with another superstar. And if Kyrie comes back, great. Now you have a third one, but you could read this as an incentive to try to get Kyrie to become more interested again and perhaps rekindle something that maybe, if this is what you believe is keeping him away, would get him back, or as insurance in case he decides I'm not in the mood to play. I don't know how to read this because I don't know how to read Kyrie.
I'm not sure anybody does.
Sure. And I mean, reading the tea leaves on the way that this trade was reported by the main newsbreakers, it sounds like Brooklyn is still at either detente or at a complete AWOL situation with Kyrie. It does not sound like it sounds like they were just moving independent of whatever happens with Kyrie. Because if you're worried that Kyrie's not going to come back and you're going to be stuck with just KD and you're thinking, oh, maybe we're not going to have a juggernaut, then your move is not to trade away your entire future of picks. It's to mm-hmm. trade away Kevin Durant and get something big from Kevin Durant and just clear house and repivot around some building blocks for the future. So this tells me that they're completely all in for this year and the next couple of years. And hey, I mean, let's say Kyrie's like, I'm done. At the very least, you could trade him to another team for someone else, like someone that's like a toxic salary of some sort, and get some take on a toxic salary of someone that can still contribute. Like, I don't know, like Kevin Love, bad example, but like someone like of that nature, Al Horford, you know, someone like that. You could potentially trade Kyrie for one of those guys, because then Kyrie's going to retire and that money comes off the books. And I can't remember if the CBA prohibits that, if the player's already declared publicly they're going to retire. I don't really know. They could do it quietly. There's, you know, there's some flexibility there. So, you know, Brooklyn, I think it's pretty clear they're committed to going all in no matter what. And I think they're pretty confident that they're going to, if they think Kyrie is considering walking away for whatever reason, I think they're pretty confident they're going to be able to sell him on this of, hey, why don't you come form the great big three ever and let's go win a couple championships. And then you can walk away.
When, with Kyrie, like, Stephen A. Smith, for what it's worth, you know, if you care about what sort of major media figures just teed off on him on Wednesday, again, for what it's worth. But Kyrie from the time of the bubble and through that has been signaling a lot of this stuff of wanting to be, you know, to be doing things that go beyond basketball and questioning basketball and all this other stuff. How much do you just wonder how much he wants to play, you know, just like at this point, because some of it feels a little bit performative. There's no question, but I don't know the guy. So if there are indications, maybe that there are things that are more important than basketball, he doesn't want to play anymore. I'm certainly not going to criticize him for that. So what do you think is sort of the push pull that's happening here? Because of the three of us, you're the only one that's actually really met the guy.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you want to criticize Kyrie for something, it's the lack of professionalism in what he's doing. The fact that he went you can request personal time off from an employer, no matter how bad timing it is, and that's reasonable if you tell them, "Hey, I got an issue. I gotta take care of." But he didn't even do that, apparently, or clearly he didn't do that. And then when you're taking time off, don't appear publicly. Don't post things on social media or let things be posted of you on social media, of you out and about living life. It's like, you know, it's just bad form. And none of us would do that. This is like him going to the Cubs game and Ferris Bueller, basically.
How does that party, by the way, the one for, you know, his sister and I suppose possibly his father, because their birthdays are around the same time. How do you not have the Derek Jeter no phones rule for that party? Like, I don't understand how you have that type of setting. Forget just that Kyrie had asked for time away from the team. He asked for time away from the team in the middle of a pandemic. Like, how do you not just institute a rule? Everybody checks in their phones. Like, I don't get it.
It's, you know, what's so shocking about it. It's not that it's shocking. It's that Kyrie's someone who claims to not like the spotlight, to not want invasion on his private life. And he is incredibly private. And there's so much stuff in his private life that I've heard about that I don't have substantiated to the point that I would talk about it publicly, but like all sorts of stuff that nobody is hearing about. They just, you know, think he doesn't have a private life, basically. And if he wanted that to not be out there, I feel like that wouldn't have been too hard of an issue. And it wasn't like it was something that he posted. It was a friend of his sister's, I guess, or maybe it was a family member, I'm not sure, posting a video where he's in the background. But like,
right, but if
he's looking at the camera, somebody, he could see.
Right, if people have access to phones, the video of that is going to get out. If you allow somebody to take video, the video is going to get out.
It's like when James Harden was partying with Lil Baby, he wanted everybody to see that. I mean, because that was a double middle finger to Houston. I mean, he was making a point. And I have no idea if, it was well made. It worked. It came across. But and I'm not saying that Kyrie is trying to make a point to Brooklyn, because I don't get a sense that there's anything hostile happening between him and the organization, Jared. But it just feels like he's totally indifferent to the obvious ramifications of that video being out there.
If it was just that he threw what he, because every year he throws a birthday party for his dad. And so like no reason for him not to continue to do that. And if they were having a massless gathering, if it's just with really close friends, while I would never do that. And when I go to see my elderly parents, I mean, his parents, his dad's younger than my parents, but my parents, they're older. I wear a mask and I sit there with a mask the entire time. And it's just the three of us. So he doesn't have to be super diligent about it. But like you can at least kind of understand that like it's a private gathering of people that are all close. So and they have the place to themselves. So you kind of understand the whole COVID protocol thing. But just forget about that. How about yesterday showing up with Cynthia Nixon for that Zoom call, which is like that's great that he's being involved with the community in that way. But that's you're showing up on a 7 o'clock call while you're supposed to be at work at 7:30 p.m., which means you're supposed to be there a few hours beforehand. Like that. That is a very public and act of defiance against your employer.
That's what I think is part of the performative aspect of it. It is very important for Kyrie. And this is the larger question that gets to this, like, you know, the more than an athlete thing is, you know, it is really important that Kyrie lets you know that he is more than an athlete, and people do not give him enough credit for the stuff he does in the community. He's philanthropic. He's an odd guy. I think it's from what I can tell, for whatever it's worth, seems like his heart is in the right place. And he does do a lot of really good work, but it's one thing to be insistent that people understand that you're more than an athlete. It's another thing to be, to diminish the sports part of it, to make the sports part feel irrelevant to the point where he almost seems offended now when you ask him about basketball, but still collects the checks. It's like you can do one or you can do the other, but I think the backlash against Kyrie comes because he's trying to do both at the same time. Yeah, I'll take the money and I'll take the, you know, the perks that come with being in the NBA, but how dare you insult me by asking me questions about
Homer Simpson when he was Mr. Plow.
Exactly.
And like,
I'll take your money, but I won't plow your driveway. Exactly. That's exactly right.
I never had any problem with Kyrie being difficult or complaining about stuff like that. My only time I had a problem with him was when he refused to show up, when he refused to fulfill the obligation. And the way that he did it, it wasn't like, listen, guys, I'm having a horrible night. Just like, let's not do it tonight. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Like that's happened. And we're understanding. And, you know, even when it's like, we really need to hear from you
even
tonight,
in Boston.
We get it. Yeah, that happens. But like, yeah, because we are the worst. But
well, you just made friends with our audience, Jared. Just with that one sentence, you probably just got like 5,000 extra followers.
Is Boston media worse and more obnoxious than New York media?
Actually, no. I do think that's actually true. It's not. But especially Kyrie, like they completely overblow it's the people that are on the ground asking the questions are not the problem. It's the national people. It's like the Stephen A. Smiths who say, go retire, like stuff.
Right.
Like I would never write a column saying Kyrie Irving has to retire. Like that's absurd. It's an absurd take. We don't do the hot takes. We try to do the real journalism, but we're the ones that get, you know, we're the ones standing in the firing line when the person's upset because on whatever show on national TV, they said a bunch of crazy stuff utilizing the clips from us asking questions. But whatever, that's how it works. As much as we try to fight it, there's not much we can do about it. The point is that Kyrie was disrespectful to not just the media, which is like whatever, but he was disrespectful to the entire ecosystem that not only empowers him, but empowers everyone else. And it's the same thing he's doing right now, where when he allows himself to be recorded at this event, at the party, when he shows up on a Zoom call publicly while his teammates are playing, the problem is that it's so disrespectful to his teammates and to the organization. And that's the part that actually bothers me. Because it's just like, it's as simple as when you're on a leave of absence, that's supposed to mean that you're in such a significant situation that you can't do things like make a public appearance on a Zoom call, that you're not in an emotional state where you're able to go do stuff like that publicly. So you can't have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, DeMar DeRozan, for example, has been away from the Spurs for a few days. I haven't seen him on a Zoom call, you know. No. And so it's ultimately, if you have to lay a marker down on where the Nets are in 3 years, this season, next season, and the season following, what do you think? Like, is there a finals appearance there? Is there a championship there? You know, obviously, we don't know what this looks like yet. But if you just, you know, kind of spitball guessing today, you know, an hour and a half or whatever after the trade has been executed.
I think this is going to be kind of like the LeBron Wade Miami team, where they're going to make the finals a few times in a row, and they're going to probably hit a stumbling block the first or second time. And then the third or fourth time, they're either going to come through or it's going to kind of fall apart. But like, I think there's just, they're too, if Kyrie is on board, they're just too talented to not get there. As good as Milwaukee and Philadelphia and maybe Miami probably might be. I just think it's too much, considering that they amazingly somehow traded for one of the best players in the NBA without gutting their rotation. Like, they still have most of the pieces of their current rotation in place. That's the part that's really remarkable.
Yeah, the only guy they really gave up that plays is LeVert.
And replacing LeVert
with Jared Allen.
They're losing Allen from the rotation, basically, because they, Torian Prince wasn't going to be in their rotation. They're replacing LeVert with Harden. So it's like, their rotation's still intact. I mean, they have a center issue, I think, but whatever. You can live with that when you have all that scoring on there.
What do you think of this deal for the rest of the teams involved? Like, I think this was great for Cleveland. I actually think Cleveland came out of this, and it's a weird thing to say, they made some really good moves over that organization.
Yeah. I mean, you get the kind of pick and roll threat that can take the pressure off of Sexland, neither of them being very good distributors, but it's really easy to run pick and roll when you can just throw up, just like lob it over the defense and Jared Allen's going to go catch it. And it makes your perimeter defense not have to be as great when you have a backstop like that. So I do think this is kind of a perfect fit for Jared Allen. They have to find a way to get off of Andre Drummond's. I don't know how that's going to happen. Maybe they just let his contract expire and that's it. But this is definitely a very shrewd move for them. They're not even giving up their own pick. They're giving up a pick from a team that's probably going to be picking in the high 20s anyway. So it worked out really well.
Can we all, before we do that, can we just all acknowledge how great it is that Sexland has really become the name, like officially the name, and nobody even blinks of that backcourt, the Darius Garland and Sexton backcourt, like, is officially Sexland. I think that's fantastic.
I've been dreaming for like some sort of dick joke to become mainstream in the NBA for so long. So to have Sexland be the name of a backcourt, it's heaven.
Yeah, it's about as well as you can do for something that still, at the end of the day, is trying to present itself as a family, as a family product.
It's a shame Jared Allen's name isn't Richard.
Please let it be his middle name.
Sexland News at 10.
Do you like this from Houston's perspective, what they ultimately did?
Sure. I mean, like we said off the top, they have so many draft picks. What did they even do with them at this point? They get to tank for a historically great draft class, and they're not even necessarily a tanking candidate at this point. I mean, Oladipo might be really good there. Christian Wood's been looking really good so far. So they're probably not good enough to be a playoff team, but they might be too good to be a bottom of the barrel, top of the lottery team. So they are in an interesting spot, but they also have more pieces that they can spin off. You know, they can trade away PJ Tucker and get another draft pick. I mean,
they could trade away Oladipo.
Who's eligible to be traded a few weeks before the trade deadline. So yeah, they could reflip him.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me at all if they moved him. I mean, if they ultimately decide we need to just go into unbridled rebuild mode as aggressively as possible, he's not a bad piece to have to continue doing that.
And I think there's a lot of teams that would be interested in taking him on if he could demonstrate that he's reliably back to where he was.
I just saw this, and Andy, I think it may have retweeted it too, about, you know, or as we were talking, the NBA announced 16 new positive COVID tests, which sounds like a lot. But among 497 players, it's actually a relatively low positive test percentage relative to the general population, particularly somewhere like where Andy and I are in Southern California. You wrote a really great feature, an informative feature about this week. It's been a little bad. Another game canceled Wednesday night. I believe it's the Suns versus the Hawks. It's the sixth one that's been postponed. There are currently, I think, three Celtics that are allowed to show up to work right now. Like, nobody in Boston is allowed anywhere near the facility. We'll tweet this out as well, but, you know, it's one of your features on The Athletic. In the spirit of contact tracing, can you kind of take us how we got to here, this place where the NBA was seeming to kind of muddle through to where now the entire schedule seems like it's about to be blown to shit because they can't stage any games?
I appreciate you calling it a feature because we really put it together like in like 4 hours, basically. So it did not take nearly as long as a feature.
It got the banner and the headline and the lead and all that on exactly. The site. Great, so they treated it like a feature, and it's great reporting.
Well, it's great. I did that one with Tim Cato, so he made it look good. I just tried to fill it when I could. But so it's the, I mean, the problem is that we don't really know where the beginning of the cycle is. We're seeing a lot of eggs. There's a chicken somewhere down the line, I guess. But we know that reportedly Jason Tatum is in the 10 to 14 day protocol, as well as Robert Williams, which you could surmise could indicate that he tested positive for COVID, but I cannot because of our editorial guidelines at The Athletic. But
you, dear listener, can surmise whatever you want. There are no restrictions on you. The Athletic cannot tell you anything. You are free to live your lives.
Now, this, just to be clear, this Williams, this is the Time Lord? Or is that the other one? I get my Williamses mixed up on Boston.
Robert Williams is Time Lord.
Okay.
Grant Williams doesn't have a nickname yet. That's something we'll have to rectify at some point.
How about Sexland?
I mean, I don't know if I think of Grant when I think of Sexland, but
it's what he refers.
Jason Tatum had a baby at 19.
I think a better question is, does Grant think of that when he thinks of Grant? That's what
I'm saying. But yeah, so basically, so those two, and then everybody that was contact traced around them, it got the team down to, they had the minimum 8 active players coming into their Sunday game against Miami. But Miami, who had played the Celtics a few days earlier, we know that Avery Bradley got brought into the protocol. And then apparently a bunch of other people also, because of contact tracing, got brought into the protocol. And Miami fell below that 8-man requirement. So they had to actually postpone the game because of Miami. And at some point over the next couple days, the Celtics had at least one other case, and that brought them below the threshold. And they're stuck below that threshold for at least basically like a week, because, you know, once a person gets into the contact tracing program, they're there for 7 days and they can't play for seven days. So the Celtics are just stuck in this weird overlap of everybody going in and out of the protocol. So Grant Williams and Tristan Thompson, they were put in the protocol, I think, back last Friday. And I talked to like 6 different people around the team and then their camps and even at the league office. And nobody could tell me the answer of, do they clear the protocol before or after Friday night's scheduled tip off against Orlando? So I guess somebody probably knows within the Celtics organization what the answer to that is. And they're obviously not going to tell me, but I talked to people that should know the answer, and even they don't know the answer. So there's a ton of confusion about when the timing starts and when the clock ends on a lot of these people that get sucked into the quarantine because they were sitting next to somebody that tested positive for a certain amount of time or whatever.
Go ahead, Andy. But that's what I think was one of the things that was interesting about your article, or as I like to call it, a feature, is, you know, the league has pretty stringent, stringent guidelines around contact tracing, pretty sophisticated ways, it seems, like being able to do that. I know in LA, Alex Caruso was held out for, you know, 7 to 8 days, forget exactly how long he missed, because of COVID contact tracing. But one of the things that I think is harder to figure out is the idea of on-court contact, like teams that have players that turn out to test positive that play other teams, and what constitutes close contact and potential transmissibility and all that on the floor. What did you guys find out there?
So the big thing is that the NBA, they adopted the CDC's protocols in kind of like the most generic way possible to kind of like give a sense of not plausible deniability, but just like kind of like a baseline standard of what we expect to be safe and unsafe contact. And so the CDC says, like, you need to be sitting within, within 6 feet of somebody for 15 minutes to be, on average, in an average situation for the public, to be considered a significant risk of contracting COVID from that person if they're positive. But, like, running around, exhaling as hard as humanly possible right in someone else's face for a couple hours, that's a much different scenario than sitting next to somebody who's just kind of breathing outwards, even while wearing a mask. These people aren't wearing masks while they're on the court. So basically, you know, the league said that, I can't remember if somebody reported this or if this was like officially stated, that Second Spectrum's player tracking data showed that players are only next to each other for like 4 minutes of game time per game. Now, that doesn't include the fact that you spend almost as much time standing around while the clock isn't running during a game, mm-hmm. right next to each other, and all sorts of other factors besides that. The fact that you're bumping up on each other, you're inadvertently spitting or breathing directly on each other's faces and whatever all the time, which, you know, you're doing stuff that if you're sitting on the bus, I hope you're not doing with the person near you. Depending on what kind of bus ride, I guess, you're going on. If you're in a Sexland bus ride, you know, maybe it's a different experience.
Call it the Grant Williams bus.
So we talked to a couple epidemiologists who have been helping governments shaping their policies that they're executing and helping organizations shape their policies, and also are in hospitals at the ground level treating COVID. And they're all saying that this just like, it doesn't make sense the way that the NBA is talking about it, the way that the NBA is treating it, that there is a cognitive dissonance here, that if you're breathing in someone's face for a few seconds and you're contagious, then there's a good chance that person's going to get it from you. Now, what's good is there's a bunch of things that kind of mitigate this. So a big thing is that these players are getting tested like twice a day, usually. Mm-hmm. So you're usually catching someone right when they're starting to become contagious. So it's pretty hard for someone to be actively contagious and be on the floor. And that's why we're not seeing massive outbreaks. Because if like Jason, let's say Jason Tatum tested positive, which I can neither confirm nor deny. If he was out there and had been infected for like 8 days at that point and was then highly infectious, everybody on the floor would have had it. But they don't, because they were able to catch him before he became highly infectious. So the risk is that someone is somewhat infectious and they're around another person just enough that they get it. And like, clearly, like, there's multiple cases we see on Dallas. Dallas has apparently 4 cases, I believe. So clearly it's spreading. It's possible that 4 players individually got it from people outside the organization, but like, that's not likely. It's most likely that it's spread within the organization.
Well, it's interesting, Jared, that you mentioned that with Dallas, because they seem to have the biggest outbreak in terms of players actually testing positive. And correct me if I'm wrong with any of this, but it feels like there's a couple ways to look at what's happening. Like, there's the upholding of the goal of trying to keep the league as COVID-free as possible. And the majority of the players who've been made unavailable for games, as disruptive as that has been to the league, to the best of my knowledge, at least, they're not testing positive. This is about contact tracing and preventative measures to keep it from possibly turning into an outbreak. So if I'm correct about that, from at least what I've read, for the Lakers example, Alex Caruso was in the protocol for a certain period, but he confirmed he never had COVID. This was just about being in proximity with somebody who had tested positive and then entering the protocols, taking these precautions. So you can look at what's going on as so far a relative success in the sense that they do seem to be preventing a true outbreak of positive tests so far, and that seems to be the case. But then you have the other goal of trying to have the league disrupted as little as possible, but also too, having the basketball itself be as palatable as possible. And that's where I think you're seeing some of the issues in terms of achieving their goals, because it's been really chaotic, I think, the whole season, but in particular, the period we're in right now.
It's not been, the first 3 weeks have not been filled with high quality basketball.
But you know what? It's basketball, and I'm still having a ton of fun with it.
I'm watching. And
I've heard people saying, like, this is bad quality basketball. Like this is a problem. As opposed to what? Not having basketball at all? Like, whatever.
You gotta, as opposed to the way everybody used to complain about the regular season anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Like, people are always going to complain. Whatever. If it hurts a little bit, so what? You're still going to be playing. You're still getting. It's not like the fans aren't going to show up to games because of this. They can't already not show up to games. Ratings are going to go down. Whatever. At least you still have the games being broadcast. You're still getting paid by advertisers to a certain degree. You're still fulfilling all the contracts that get you the billions of dollars in TV money. So there's no incentive for them to shut down because of the concerns over the product. The only incentive to shut down would just be that if they think that they're hitting a critical mass of infection cases and they need to shut down. It definitely does not seem like they're at that point right now, even with all the cancellations going on or postponements going on right now. The fact is, we just got the word that there were 16 cases out of 400 something when you're in, well, that doesn't include staffers actually, but whatever. The point is that it's still a very small percentage.
Yeah. That's really what I was getting at when I was saying, in terms of that type of goal, it feels like they've actually been successful so far. It was interesting though. I'm curious what you think about this. Zach Lowe's most recent podcast, Low Pope's podcast, part of it was with an epidemiologist. And very informative, talking
same
about
same guy from program. Our story, actually.
Yeah. Yes.
Same doctor. Yeah.
You're correct. He very, very, very good. Also, he's a Laker fan. So everybody listening to this, you've got extra incentive for sending you to somebody else's podcast to listen as well. But
if you're looking for an epidemiologist to really throw your weight behind and support as a Laker fan, exactly. This is the guy for you.
Yeah, he bleeds purple and gold, just like you. But the other half of the podcast was with Woj, and Woj raised an interesting point that he's heard from a lot of teams around the league, in that they're concerned that these new restrictions, like say with shootarounds and stuff like that, and just the general amount of emphasis that's being placed on players not being together as much as possible, that it could start affecting treatment plans for players and maintenance and stuff like that. And it could start putting them at a higher risk for injury, which was something that I hadn't thought about before. But I think it speaks to just all the different things that the league has to juggle being in this place right now.
See, I don't buy that, because your players are probably getting on average 30 to 60 minutes of treatment and workouts and stuff like that per day. They'll make time. It just means that the trainers have to work longer hours, which sucks for them. But, like, come on. The NBA players have, like, 8 hours of nothing to do every single day, pretty much. They only have to work about, 6 to 8 hours a day most of the time. It's not that much. So they got plenty of downtime where, they can make it work. The issue is players in their private lives conducting themselves in a safe manner. I just got a text 5 minutes ago with some information I'm going to have to verify with other sources, but indicating that
we're here, Jared.
It certainly indicates that the restrictions on players on the road staying in their hotel rooms is going to be very impactful on curbing this issue.
How is that not a rule before? I assumed that was a rule.
If I thought it was just that, like, players were basically like, they would set up a game room and stuff like that, and players would get to hang out and do something. Because, like, it does suck if you have to go on the road and you literally have to sit in your hotel.
You have to stay in your hotel. You can't go anywhere.
Exactly. Like, that's rough. Like, that's rough for sure. But they were trying to accommodate these players to a certain degree. But there's a lot of rumors going around, and I'll see what I can verify. But, like, there's a lot of rumors of players going out hitting the town, stuff like that when they're on the road. And like, that's the stuff that's like, everyone is working so hard, investing so much time and money into like trying to make it safe so that these guys aren't getting it. And then they're going out and they're kind of disregarding it. And it's like Damian Lillard, I saw he had a quote where I think the full quote was way more reasonable, but a part of the quote was like, you know, if I have to just sit at home all day because this is what we have to do to keep it safe, then maybe this isn't worth doing. And I was reading that, I'm like, I haven't seen any of my friends in like 4 months now. I was barely leaving the house as was, and then one of my friends got COVID and it caused a major scare. And we're like, all right, guys, we're just not going to see each other at all in person anymore. That's what most of us are living like. Like, right. That's what life is like for average people.
Yeah, and LeBron actually, well, he was asked about these new rules, and he's like, look, as somebody living in LA County, the rules are basically how we live our lives as it is. Like, it doesn't really affect me one way or the other.
And I think somebody like LeBron is aware, too, of what it looks like if he looks like he's flaunting protocols. Like, I mean, there are a lot of people, you know, you spend some time on NBA Twitter. We obviously spend, there's a lot there's a range of opinion. There are people who think the league is morally bankrupt for demanding these guys go play, keeping in mind that the players want to play because they have a limited window of their careers. There's a ton of money at stake. They want to get paid. And while I don't necessarily want to live in a world where money is the only consideration that people take, and money shouldn't be a consideration over health and all of these other things, at the same time, you know, the money is not insignificant, and the impact that it has on these families and these players and the league and the people who work in the league and the people who work in the, like the infrastructure of the NBA supports a lot of stuff. And so I am a little reticent to do some of the sort of extreme moralizing that you see from some people, you know, on, you know, basketball opinion. Where do you think the line is, though, where the NBA would just be like, you know what, whether it's because the optics don't work, because of the, you know, they are legitimately, I think they do care about the health and safety of their players and their staff, where they would say this doesn't work. Because there is an argument, too, that if you, like you say, if you let guys just go home for 2 weeks, you're going to come back in 2 weeks and have a worse COVID problem than the one that you have now.
And let's not forget, like, the NBA is not just trying to keep this year going. Like, they need to keep the league going long term. And, you know, even before answering that, one thing people should keep in mind, every single NBA team has hundreds of people working for it that are normal people that are making less than $100,000 a year, mostly, that, you know, that they need their health care and their income. And they're, you know, it's like, not everybody is super rich that works for NBA teams. There are huge apparatuses or apparati behind them in marketing, ticket sales, all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's tons of people that just because the fans aren't in the stands, there are lots of people that are out of a job right now just because like they can't even do what their jobs are for that kind of stuff. So it's really like it's important. And that's just the people that work for the franchises. Forget about who cares about the reporters that depend on it. But there's like there's businesses that depend on.
I care. I do. So, actually.
And yeah, I'd like to have them too. So
not to make it about us, but you know, this has affected Brian and I. I mean, you know, there and we're not alone. I mean, you look across our industry. You know, there are layoffs in every single major company. You know, and it's probably not about to be over. So you're correct. There is a ripple effect to all of this. It's not just about the most front-facing people.
No, I didn't sleep. I worked 7 days a week nonstop for a while to make sure I kept my job because I was so worried about it. Because it's like, and my company is incredibly generous, I would say, relative to a lot of the other companies that did mass layoffs or even shut down their coverage. So whatever, mm-hmm. I don't want to dive too far into that. But to get to the actual answer, which I can't even remember what the question is now.
Where's the line? Just where is that spot where they feel like they just like they have to stop for whatever that reason might be?
I think the line is, I think there's a couple ways this line can get crossed. There's you can look at what happened with Keontae Johnson, the Florida player who suffered a cardiac event, a life-threatening cardiac event, because they diagnosed him with myocarditis, which is an enlarged or an irritated heart or a large heart caused by COVID. And that was something that was mentioned in our story, that this is one of the crazy side effects that happens of COVID, that it affects people's hearts, which puts people that perform aerobic exercising for a living, like basketball players do, and you know, any one of them could potentially die from it. And thankfully, the NBA has a cardiac screening process that they do with people after they test positive. I don't know much about the process, except for that they have a process, but I'm sure it's sufficient enough to determine if somebody's at risk. But also, you might not find somebody might not look like they're at risk right when they return to the protocol, and then later on they develop it. So it's like maybe a tragedy like that happens. And then maybe somebody gets COVID and they have and they get extremely sick, and it either becomes life threatening or fatal, or it just like it damages their lungs to the point that they can't play again. So maybe somebody gets COVID and they have to retire because of it due to medical reasons. So there's stuff like that. Or somebody from a team, family member gets COVID and passes away from it, which I think is we've seen that happen. I mean, no one's like traced it back to because of the NBA being active is the reason. But, you know, people around the league have passed away. So I think it's, you know, it's when this becomes life threatening and most importantly, well, not most importantly, but also more impactful, I guess, on the league's decision making. Affects the safety and the future stability of the league having players that are safe and healthy and able to play. Mm-hmm. That's when I think they reach a point of this is not worth that level of risk.
But until then, the plan is to try to keep things going as best as they can.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, going back to the Kyrie thing, maybe Kyrie thinks that it's not safe for him to be around the NBA. And I mean, based on him being maskless at the video of the party, I doubt that's the issue, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see opt-outs. I mean, we saw that in the NFL.
Sure. I mean, broadly, I mean, Avery Bradley opted out of the bubble specifically for this reason last year.
And ironically, I feel really bad for Avery Bradley. He just recently had to enter the protocol. You know, after all that, he was one of the Miami players who had to do that. So, I mean, go figure. It just lets you know how difficult
it is important to point out before we let you go. It's important to point out that, you know, not every player that gets COVID. Not every person that gets COVID because they were behaving irresponsibly. It's a very communicable, highly contagious virus that is easy to pass from one person to the next. And you know, I think what
it's easy to do it without even knowing you have it.
Sure. I think all you can ask is that for players to respect each other and to do it in, you know, to try to behave in a way that works in little stuff. I mean, people laugh, but like they instituted the masks on the bench thing, like two days, like if you were an inactive player, like 3 or 4 days, I think it was before Seth Curry actually tested positive and was sitting on the bench with the Sixers. And I remember you hit that like, well, why are they doing that? And then you're like, oh, well, I guess that one might've come in handy there. Like all these little things, some of them are performative, but you can only help at the margins, I think, at this point, because the fundamental decision is either we're going to try or we're going to not. And so we'll just make it as safe as we possibly can, knowing that there is no such thing as safe outside a bubble.
Yeah. And like, and you have to remember for 95% of these situations, not only is someone completely completely dubious to the idea that they're getting infected when they get it, but a lot of the people that do things that are breaking protocol and that's what causes transmission to happen, they're doing stuff like they're hugging like a friend and they're not wearing a mask. Like they're doing stuff that's like the most basic fundamental things that a human being needs to do to just not be miserable. It's the, you know, there is for every one of those people, there's somebody at Little Baby or was it Little Baby?
Yeah, Little Baby's
birthday party with a stripper, you know, twerking in their face. There's some of that.
But like, that's one extreme.
Relatively small. That's the exception, not the rule, I think,
of behavior. Even Kyrie's party was like, you know, it is sort of not acceptable, and like given the context, whatever. But even that, it's a party for a sister. It's a family event. Like
no, that was party a
private
was
not event. Acceptable.
It's somewhere. All I'm saying is there's space between perfect behavior, Little Baby, and you know, like that falls somewhere in between. And so like, yeah, it's been a hell of a year. All right. Jared Weiss covers the Celtics for The Athletic. You can catch him on the Daily Ding, host of the excellent podcast. They're really, really fun stuff. It's always a good time. We appreciate you doing this on what turned out to be an extremely, extremely busy day in the NBA. This was fun. Thank you.
No, this has been awesome. I really appreciate it, guys. I'd love to come on and talk Lakers sometime too, but maybe on a day where there's not a breaking news.
Maybe we'll change. We're scheduled. The Lakers are to play the Celtics or
some sort of Celtics skeleton crew near the end of the month.
I might have to suit up at that point. We'll see.
See if you can get your buddy, the Laker fan epidemiologist, to come on with you.
That's right. That'd be great.
Hopefully Grant Williams can stop having sex long enough to join the game. Poor Grant Williams, probably just a really nice, modest,
He is. He's like a terrific, he's a terrific guy. He's very sweet. Yeah, guy.
Now I've turned him into some sort of 70s style sex dynamo.
He needs a little bit of edge to his personality. Actually.
Oh, well, you're it's welcome, good. Grant.
Yeah. Right, we'll talk to you soon. Starring Grant Williams.
I can be somebody. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thanks to Jared Weiss for joining us from The Athletic on, again, just a crazy day in the NBA. These things escalate quickly once they start to happen. And Andy, it's because the Lakers broke the Rockets that the Rockets had to move this quickly.
Broke them in the playoffs, broke them in the regular season. They just broke the shit out of them.
They just the Lakers made James Harden give up. Mm-hmm. That's sad. Not really. Before we go, I want to take a second to shout out Houston Rockets big man DeMarcus Cousins. I think he's happy to have James Harden out of town, judging by his comments on Wednesday. Did y'all know, though, that he has his own comedy show? We got a chance to watch it over the holidays. It was really, really funny. Steph Curry, several NBA players were in the crowd getting roasted. Mike Epps, the host. And it features some other funny comedians, including Gary Owen and Carlos Miller. It's streaming now on Amazon Prime, available for free on Tubi TV, TUBI TV. Go check it out.
Yeah, if he was available to update that comedy special, it would feature a lot of jokes about James Harden. Also want to make sure to remind everybody, Lando Lakers podcast, as always, brought to you by the folks over at Delicious Pizza, two locations in West Adams, also in Hollywood, 20% off. If you use the password CAMBROTHERS, support local business. It's extremely important right now. You are also supporting the local business of a massive, massive Laker fan. So again, Delicious Pizza, two locations, West Adams, also in Hollywood, 20% off when you use the code CAMBROTHERS.
All right. So obviously busy day. We'll see over the next, I doubt this will be the last time we talk about the impact of the James Harden trade. So we'll see how these things shake out, affect the power dynamics in the Eastern Conference, what it might look like if the Lakers and the Nets were to meet at some point in a finals, another LeBron KD kind of encounter. It's fun to think about, if nothing else, but we're a long way away from that. But we will be back on our normal time. Sunday night, we'll record for a Monday show. We will see everybody next time.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit Spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.